where innovation meets the law.
Support for WMNF comes from our members and Happy Feet Plus. Since 1985, Happy Feet Plus has been providing healthy footwear solutions, including brands such as Birkenstock, Finn Comfort, and Kenko massage sandals. Styles and selections at happyfeet.com.
I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world.
Good afternoon. I'm Janelle Irwin. You are listening to Midpoint Friday on WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. Coming up this hour, the war on drugs and needle exchanges. But first, we'll be discussing the latest attacks on Tampa mayoral candidate Jane Castor. Castor is a 31-year veteran of the Tampa Police Department, serving the last several years as chief of police. During her tenure, Castor earned a pretty sizable pension and is collecting about $113,000 a year in annual pension benefits. If she's elected mayor, she'll be also collecting a mayor's salary, which right now is about $160,000 a year. Castor's opponent, David Straz, is accusing her of double dipping because both her pension and her mayoral salary would be government funded. It all started with this ad, which dropped on TV stations in Tampa last night.
Castor gets a city pension of $115,000 a year. Now she wants another $160,000 a year as mayor. It's not right. An insider like Castor looking out for herself instead of us.
David Straz won't take a salary as mayor. He'll audit the city budget to sweep out waste and inefficiency. That's what we're looking for.
That was David Straz television advertisement that started airing last night. Jane Castor's campaign immediately responded to it yesterday, calling it a, quote, stunt. They issued a scathing statement blasting Straz as out of touch with everyday voters. Campaign manager Tim Wagner said, quote, David Straz doesn't understand working families. The statement went on to list various assets, including a $1 million mausoleum in his home, $170 million worth of art that he owns. It also mentioned that since he drives a Bentley, which is a very, very expensive luxury car, he's, quote, it's not, quote, not surprising that he is out of touch with people who have to work for a living. We're going to talk about this. We're going to answer questions. Is this double dipping? Is Straz right to make these claims? Is he off base? Does it matter? Are you going to vote? Let's just talk about it all. The number to call is 813-239-9663. You can also email us at dj@wmnf.org, or you can shoot us a text at 813-433-0885. So after Castor responded to Straz's ad, Straz then offered a response to Castor's response, saying, and do with this what you will, that while yes, he does indeed own a Bentley, he actually prefers to drive either his Cadillac or his Dodge Charger. Pause for emphasis. So then later in the day, the Tampa police and fire unions, we're still going on the same day, by the way, here, people. The Tampa police and fire unions announced that they were going to host a press conference condemning Straz's negative campaigning. This is one of their own, keep in mind. That press conference happened this morning. More on that in a second. Before the press conference even happened, Straz issued yet another response. So now we're at a response to the response, to the response, to the ad. Is that, I think I've got it right. This time in video form. It was basically a hashtag sorry, not sorry sort of moment. Here's what he had to say in the response, to the response, to the response.
Make no mistake about it. I applaud the service of every man, woman in uniform. I get it. The unions are defending one of their own, but it's indefensible. Double dipping is double dipping. It's wrong. She will take two salaries as your mayor. I'll take none.
Okay, so the press conference that he was responding to that hadn't happened when he actually responded to it, which did end up happening later this morning. Keep up, folks. It was very brief, and it was basically just pointed out that A, police officers earn their pensions. It's part of their salary packages. And B, it's not a salary, it's a pension. So that's it in a nutshell. And there are loads of other examples of Straz's negative campaigning, but we can get into all of that later. Right now, I want to know, what do you think? Is Castor double dipping? Do you care that Straz promises not to take a salary if he's elected? Does that remind you of anyone in particular? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You know, then on the other side of it, you might have some very valid points coming out of the Straz camp here. After all, he made the point that Castor's net worth is over, albeit just slightly, over the $1 million mark. And $113,000 is a respectable amount of money to live on, more than most Tampa residents, I would say, see in a year for sure. So give us a call. Let us know what you think. 813-239-9663. Let's go ahead and take some calls because I think we already have... No, we don't? Oh, we have one. Okay. Louie and Brandon, what's on your mind? Louie? Do I have you? Now I have you, Louie. We're having some... Louie, we have you. We just can't hear you. So hold on a second. Louie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm in.
Hey, we got it. Woo. All right, it's something with this. It's something with this one particular line that's like a headache, and you just happen to land on the line that's a headache. So sorry about that. What's on your mind, Louis?
Well, I'm thinking that this whole notion of double dipping is idiocy at its best. Jane is receiving a pension for services rendered over the years, and if she had not done those, she wouldn't be entitled to it. So give her what she's due. The salary as mayor, yeah, Straz can do the job without a salary because he doesn't need it. He's got more than enough money that would satisfy the needs of 15 or 20 different people that I know, at least that many. So it's kind of a statement of ego to say, well, I won't take a salary.
So what about his, he made the point, and I think a lot of people would say that it's a fair one, that while she doesn't have as much money as he does, you know, and I said this, $113,000 pension is, you know, that's still a substantial amount of money, especially for somebody who's already amassed, you know, a $1 million net worth, you know, yeah. Why shouldn't she, you know, take a page out of Straz's playbook and then do the same? That's the point that they're trying to make, that she could ostensibly do the same thing that he's doing.
Why would she want to? She's earned whatever she's got, as Straz has earned whatever he's got. Now, he can make the choice to donate his time and his efforts to manage the city of Tampa, but Jane Castor equally has the ability to make the choice whether or not she wants to contribute gratis her time and her energies. I don't think it's respectable to ask somebody to do the job for free.
I'm only like 10 minutes into my show and I've already pissed off somebody. So it was pointed out, what's with the wink, wink, nudge, nudge? Fair enough. My point was, and I was being not, I was being intentionally ironically intentionally ironic in the fact that this is, you know, the whole I'm not going to take a salary, that's what Trump did. And one of the things, the scars that Straz has been trying to fight back against in this campaign, and he's having a hard time. I mean, let's face it, he's more than 30 points behind in the polls. It is the comparisons to Trump. And even though he said that he's since regretted casting a vote for Trump, he did. And people, you know, that sticks with not everybody, but certainly some voters. So I just thought it was funny that I already pissed people off.
Well, and so, you know, that's one of the consequences of doing the kinds of things you do.
Well, if you're not making somebody mad, you're probably not doing a very good job.
Exactly. In my former job, that's what one of my supervisors once told me. But the reality of not taking a salary is a two-edged sword, and it's equally sharp on each side. When you don't take a salary, there is a psychological value that says, because I'm not taking a salary, I don't have to be loyal to the people who would have paid my salary. So I can act in my own interest. Guess who does it? Now, I wasn't going to make the Trump comparison, but you're absolutely right. Trump doesn't take a salary, neither does Ivanka, and neither does Jared. And those people tend to give me the sense, or they suggest to me, that they are not working for our interest because we pay their salaries. They're working for their own personal interest. There's an ethical question that comes in there that really is nasty.
Well said, Louis. Thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, you enjoy your weekend. Let's go to John in Tampa. John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I agree 100% with the guy just got off, meaning I retired military. I got a pension. Now I work for the government. You think I'm going to work for free? I don't care if I'm getting $30,000 a year from my military pension. What, I supposed to work for free? That's nuts. This guy's going to lose the election because he's coming out making stupid statements like that. He is so out of touch, meaning most of those people who say, I'm not going to take a salary, whether it's the president of the United States or whether this Strass guy, he don't get it. You're going to make money, trust me. You're probably going to quadruple what you could have made in that position. That's the ethical issue. You're not taking a salary because you're going to line up deals and back doors. And look at the governor of this state, Scott, what he did. He didn't take a salary, but he walked away with almost several hundred million dollars. That is stupid. That's my opinion.
John, thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate your thoughts. You know, I want to bring something else up, and let's do this as kind of a call to action here for you listeners out there. So last night, David Strass hosted a telephone town hall for what his campaign said was voters in South Tampa. And not anybody could just call up and join this town hall. So it's not like it was just open to the public and they publicized a number to call or whatever. They allegedly sent out a mass, like, robocall, if you will, to 29,000 people who lived in South Tampa. And those people, my understanding is, had some sort of instructions if they wanted to participate in this call to be able to participate in it. And then they could ask questions. So the campaign also gave members of the media a call-in number that we could use. We couldn't ask questions, or at least we were told we couldn't, but we were able to listen in. So I listened, and I followed up afterwards and asked several questions of the Strass campaign, and none of them were answered. They haven't been yet anyway. But so here is my takeaway from this, and I have a story about it up on my website for the company I work for, floridapolitics.com, if you want to read it in its entirety. But basically, most of the questions that were taken that Strass answered during the a little over 1 hour, quote-unquote, town hall, most of them were from what they said was Facebook. And almost as if, like, they sensed that I was checking to see that these questions were actually coming from Facebook, they then followed up and said, you know, oh, we're taking questions on Facebook Messenger. So, of course, nobody but whoever has access to the Strass campaign's Facebook page could see that. So these questions allegedly coming from voters through Facebook, most of them, were overwhelmingly opportunities for him to either talk about his campaign platform or reiterate his critique of his opponent, Jane Castor. And let me just preface this for those out there who are going to throw some shade my way and say that I'm favoring Castor here. It's campaigning, and this happens. And these are just my observations. And if this had been something that had been done in any campaign, I would still be making the same exact comments. It doesn't matter who the candidate is. This is what I observed. And so some of the questions were things like, why do you not support red light cameras, which is one of Straz's major talking points. He doesn't want red light cameras, and Jane Castor supports them. Will you accept donations from major developers like Domain Homes? Well, Straz has frequently criticized his opponent for accepting contributions from developers, including one of the major players, Domain Homes. You recently met with a mother whose son was killed by Tampa police. Why did you do that? It gave him an opportunity to explain why he was so appalled at what he publicly has called potentially a cover-up by the Tampa Police Department under Jane Castor's watch. So there was all these things, and you know, I'm certain that as a Tampa voter, the issues that he's bringing up are very important, and all of the issues should certainly be considered in any race, wherever it is, and whether it's local, state, federal, doesn't matter. But nevertheless, it seemed like this entire forum, it almost looked like it was staged and to give him an opportunity to talk about the things that he wanted to talk about. Why is that important? Why is that newsworthy? Because he's decided that he's not going to participate in all of the forums, campaign forums that are available for him to participate in. He's already done one. It was the Hillsborough County Black Democratic Caucus. And then he's doing two television debates, one on Bay News 9, one on WEDU, and then one on a radio station that a lot of people haven't heard of. I'm not going to say the call letters because I can't recall them off the top of my head, but it's a local AM station that serves the African-American community. I apologize. I'll pull it up here as I'm talking and fill you guys in on what station that is in just a minute. But anyway, so for somebody who's bowing out of all of these forums to start hosting your own forums without any opportunity to be challenged from somebody else, whether it's your opponent or other voters who might want to push you critically, I think it just raises some questions. So I think that that's an important thing to, point out as a reporter. Anyways, if you want to talk about this race, we're going to switch gears in not too terribly long. The number to call is 813-239-9663. Let's take another call. Let's go to Curtis in Tampa. Curtis, you're on the air with WMNF's Midpoint Friday. What can I do for you?
I was just concerned about those red lights. I think it's ridiculous. They're stealing. I've been on the four times paid them people for nothing. Gonna go on there and meet all the people inside there. I mean, come on.
Wait, like, Curtis, yeah. I'm sorry, what's stealing?
The red light.
Oh, the red light cameras are stealing.
Yeah, that's stealing from poor people. I've been on the four times paid them people money.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny that you say that, Curtis, because this is just me talking as somebody who drives a car, right? Not as a journalist, a radio host, or a reporter. I just happen to be on the radio right now. But I have mixed feelings personally about them because on one hand, it does seem that there is a disproportionate effect on lower income individuals. As with anything, the people who can least afford these sorts of expenses are the people who are affected most by them.
Especially the old people on a tight budget.
But also at the same time, it's like, well, don't run red lights. So I'm kind of conflicted on it.
I think they should do away with it. That's ridiculous. It's stealing to me.
Well, what about people who run red lights? So you don't think, I'm just playing devil's advocate here. Because like I said, I'm totally like split on this issue.
Now, that's another problem, because you got a bunch of drunks, like you said, running the lights. Yeah, it's good to cameras for that particular reason, but this is where you come into a complete stop on time. And I come on, man, that's, if nothing that you could go on, but they're giving me tickets that I didn't stop, and then they can't see me inside the Jeep.
Yeah, that's the right on red issue, yeah. And that's why St. Pete canceled their program, because they had so many issues. One of the people who was actually in charge of reviewing the citations for the right on red infractions, he got a right on red ticket in St. Pete and he challenged it. And then they were like, okay, well, even the guy who reviews the challenges is challenging his own ticket. So maybe we should just go ahead and make this thing go by. But I actually got a right on red ticket down in the Ellenson area. And boy, let me tell you, I was not a happy camper. I was pissed because I slowed almost down to a stop. Like I watched the video and I'm like, this is BS.
You can't see nothing inside of them. Like I told him, I know it's when I went to license my Jeep. He said, I didn't pay them ticket. He says another one. I said, no. But I paid it.
Well, the state legislature considers it just about every year, so Write your state representative, I suppose.
Well, y'all keep up the good work, man.
Thank you, Curtis. I appreciate the call. You have a fantastic weekend.
You too.
All right. Sean Canaan from the newsroom just flashed me a post-it note through the window. WTMP is the radio station that Jane Castor and actually, I don't know that Jane Castor has confirmed attendance, but David Straz has definitely confirmed attendance for a debate on that station. And now, Sean, if you want to bring me another post-it note with the date, that'd probably be helpful as well. Andy in Dunedin, what's on your mind, Andy?
I can't quite remember, but I thought WTMP was the soul of Tampa Bay back in the 70s. But
maybe. I wasn't alive in the 70s, though, so I forget.
I'm just an old baby boomer. But, you know, Straz, he just reeks of one of these wealthy old white men that feels entitled that he should be able to, you know, walk right into the mayor's office and take over. And just the fact that he like you said, compared him to Trump not wanting to take a salary or anything, that just smacks of old rich white guys who are trying to make us feel a little better about him. But I think he just feels entitled, and maybe even how dare a woman challenge him and maybe quite possibly beat him for a mayor's race. It really makes me glad I live in Dunedin.
I see what you did there, Andy. And you know, you make a really good point about the entitlement thing, and certainly if you're somebody out there who knows David Straz personally, maybe you have a different interpretation, but he has said some things that lend to the argument that he could potentially just be an out of touch rich guy. And I've written about several of those instances. There was a TVAE interview that he did several weeks ago, long before the March 5th election, in which he admitted in that televised interview that he gave money to charity to save money on his taxes. We all know that rich people do that, right? Like, that's no secret. We're all well aware that that's a little loophole.
Yeah,
it's just most people. Most people don't admit it so freely. And then the day after the election, during a press conference, he was asked about how much money he's spending, and he said the only people who care about how much money is being spent are the people who don't have it, which also sounded rather out of touch. There have been several instances in which he, and then there was the Bentley thing where he's like, well, I don't always drive my Bentley. Sometimes I drive my, you know, Cadillac or my Dodge Charger, as if somehow it just made him more relatable because he told us, I have three cars. There's not one.
Him. Yeah, well, I think I'm going to have to run here. I got to go hurl before.
Well, good one. All right, thank you so much for the call, Andy. Have a great weekend. Yeah, I've got to, after I leave here, I've got to jump into my starting to fall apart Hyundai Elantra, and I don't have a backup. Let's take one or two more calls, and then we're going to take a break, and I'm going to switch topics. You are listening to Midpoint Friday on WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. Frank Knox is our engineer today, and Patty Perkey is on the phones. If you'd like to get in on the queue, the number to call is 813-239-9663. Let's go to Richard in South Shore. What's on your mind, Richard?
Hey, I was in the back for Castor until you told me about the red light thing.
Well, I'm going to be getting a nasty call from her campaign pretty soon, although it's not my job to churn votes for anyone. So,
Yeah, I was at work at the time. I supposedly ran a red light on the other side of the state. I forget the town, somewhere over in the Palm Beach area. And I had to pay him $161. Now, you know, I could have contested it, took the day off work, and done all kinds of things and drove across the state, but
it wasn't worth it.
It was on a truck I had junked years before, so I do not like the red light camera. Other than that, I think Pastor, I'm pretty much tired of old rich white guys right at this point, although I wish there was one.
The guy part I could take or leave, but the rich part, I wouldn't complain.
Already old now. I probably don't want that.
Richard, it's worth pointing out that while the mayor certainly has the bully pulpit in terms of suggesting and pushing for policies, getting rid of red light cameras in the city of Tampa, that's going to require city council. So
yeah, that's what I figured.
Yep.
So I'll probably still vote for her, but you better watch your step.
You tell her. Have a good one, Richard. Thank you so much for the call. Let's take one more, and then we're going to... You know what? I've got two on hold, so let's try to get to both of these. Tony in Clearwater, what's on your mind, my friend?
Hey, I just wanted to say, you know, in life, you get what you pay for. And, you know, with our president, I think he's doing a good job. I think Jane Castor did a great job in her position when she was in doing her thing. And I think she'd be a good mayor. But then again, you know, there's other candidates that need to show what they can do as well. And whoever's going to get the job just needs to think about the people in the city, in the rural areas, because that's who indefinitely puts them in a position and pays their salaries.
Very well said, Tony. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Take care.
All right, one more. Mike in Sarasota. What's on your mind, Mike?
Yes, I just want to object to the comments of one of your callers about a couple of comments back. He referred to wealthy old white guys. And as a white person, I find that comment to be racist. I mean, what if I were to say, oh, so-and-so's a wealthy old black guy? And you know, people would naturally say, though, that's racist. Well, or if I said a wealthy old Latino. You know, we what's good for the goose is good for the gander. We cannot be casually racist towards anybody, and that includes white people.
I think, and bear with me here, I think that when people say stuff like that, I think the argument is that it's, you can't really call it racist. Like, that's the reverse racism argument, right? Like, how could the race that has never been oppressed suddenly complain that people are oppressing them? Like, do you feel like white people are being oppressed now?
I feel like people feel like they are free to discriminate against white people. And because, I mean, if you're free to insult white people, then you're free to discriminate against them. And so,
okay.
So we're gonna have preference for wealthy old black guys as opposed to wealthy old white guys. I mean, that's racist. That's racism pure.
I think it's just because the majority of the people with money and power tend to be white. So it's just a statistic more. But I get what you're saying about saying it. I mean, it does sound mean. Let me ask you another question, Mike. Do you think that we should say all lives matter and not black lives matter?
I think there's a lot of room for a debate on that particular point. I think if you're trying to talk about crime committed against police against black people, I think there's room to say that we can talk about Black Lives Matter without it. But of course, all lives do matter. But of course,
yes, of course.
I see both sides of that.
One more.
What I want to say to you is, if you want to talk about wealthy people, you know, keeping power, let's say he's another wealthy guy, because there are plenty of wealthy Latinos. There are plenty, and there are even plenty of Latin women, perhaps, wealthy Latin women.
Would you agree that it's fair to say that there's nowhere near as many?
Well, in America, of course not, because the demographics of America are majority white.
Well, we're talking about American politics, so I think it's fair to isolate that question to just the United States.
But if you want to talk about wealth and power, we don't need to racialize it.
Well, we're talking about wealth and power in the Tampa mayoral race. We're not talking about, you know, like Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, right. But again, you also see it. You also see it spread into even education. People talk about literature. They say, "Oh, Shakespeare's an old white guy." No, why?
I've literally never heard anybody call Shakespeare an old white guy.
Did you ever see the movie Mean Girls?
I have seen the movie Mean Girls. I'm quite a fan,
Mean
actually.
Girls, the teacher refers to Shakespeare as a dead white guy.
Hmm. Okay, so that's one. So I've seen that movie, so I guess I'm wrong. I have heard that before, but I did not recall it. But that's one example.
For here is fairness amongst the races. I say let's not slam any race because of their color. Or just because of their race.
I mean, I know that you mean well, but I also know that there are a lot of black and brown people out there who would take offense to that statement too. So, well, I mean,
yeah, sure, it is politically correct. It's politically correct to disparage white people and to place other races on some sort of podium where they can't be criticized.
It's just, if you were black, you would feel like white people have been put on a pedestal for, like, ever.
Right, but I want to move beyond that. I want to move into a future where...
A post-racial future?
Everybody is treated equally, and they're not judged on the basis of their skin. Is that so bad?
All right. We're gonna have to let this go. I'm gonna switch topics, and now we're gonna do drugs. Not literally. Yeah, good luck indeed. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate the call. All right. We are going to take a quick break here on Midpoint Friday. I am Janelle Irwin. Frank Knox is our engineer. Patty Perkey is on the phones. If you'd like to get on the queue, we are not going to do drugs in a minute, but we are going to talk about people who do drugs and the needle exchanges that could save their lives. If you want to talk about that issue, give us a call. The number is 813-239-9663, and we will be right back.
I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't. I'm afraid of Americans. I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. I'm afraid I can't.
Well, we should have had a new song on there, but we didn't. So it is what it is. All right. So welcome back to Midpoint Friday on WMNF. I'm Janelle Irwin, and we are now going to transfer topics from the Tampa mayoral race that has gotten quite dirty over the past several weeks. And we're instead going to switch it to, I guess this could be an offshoot of the war on drugs, if you will. So here's the issue, right? People who do drugs are addicted to them. And there's a lot of problems that are way more outside of the scope than just the drug use itself. And in this particular instance, we're talking about needles. So when you have people who are addicted to drugs and they, you know, they're going to do what they're going to do. And if they don't have access to clean needles, they're going to share them. And then you're battling epidemics with things like HIV and hepatitis and all these sorts of things. So I had no intention of talking about this on my show today. None whatsoever. Zero zilch. But I came in long before the sun came up this morning. If you were listening, you might have heard me do the headlines at 6:30, 7:30, and 8:30. But while prepping for those newscasts, I stumbled across another public radio station's report. It's from South Florida's WLRN, and it's a long feature, which if you're familiar with radio journalism, you know that that's pretty rare. I listened to it thinking maybe I could shorten it to just a blurb for the headlines. I couldn't. It was just way too in-depth and way too wonderful to cut it to bits. I was so impressed with this reporter. Her name's Sammy Mack, and her amazing report that she did. I decided to play it for you on my show today and let callers weigh in with their thoughts. So Mack has been following the issue of needle exchanges in Miami as part of a temporary pilot program that allows drug users to exchange used needles for new ones. For a year. And I cannot emphasize enough how much I loved this report. So give it a listen. While you do, get in on the queue because this is an important topic and I want to spend the rest of the show talking about it. The number again is 813-239-9663. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org or send us a text at 813-433-0885. And let's go ahead and take a listen to Sammy Mack's report from WLRN in Miami.
There's a spot along 11th Street in Overtown in Miami that's surrounded by overpasses. And this time last year, a guy with heavy black arrows tattooed on his arms showed up there pretty regularly.
I'm Arrow.
Nice to meet you.
Pleasure.
Arrow was a heroin user, and he came to the spot a couple of times a week to swap his used needles for clean ones at a mobile needle exchange. Big green van, really.
Now I can shoot with a clean needle every time.
We're not using his full name because the program keeps participants anonymous. Florida continues to have some of the highest new HIV rates in the country, in the middle of an opioid epidemic. Miami's needle exchange is the model for a proposed new law that could jumpstart needle exchanges across the state. When we first met, Arrow was sleeping under an overpass. He was wiry and a little twitchy. He'd been using heroin since the 70s, he said, after he got shot. He told me he and every addict he knew always put the drugs first. Clean needles were an afterthought.
If I didn't have any of my own, I had to try to clean out the ones that I had. Every once in a while, I did use someone else's, and that was a thrill ride, wondering whether or not I was going to catch anything. But I'm blessed. I'm 57, and I don't have anything.
In the 3 years it's been around, the exchange has pulled 250,000 used needles out of circulation. It hands out Narcan, too, the drug that reverses opioid overdoses. According to the exchange, that piece of the program has prevented 1,000 and some overdoses. The program also offers testing for HIV and Hep C. That's how Arrow knew he was negative. It connects people to medical care and drug rehab. Arrow wasn't so interested in that part.
I'm not a recovering addict. I don't go to them damn meetings.
Alrighty. Now we will take up Bill 366 on infectious disease elimination.
Senate
programs.
Bill 366 would allow all Florida counties to authorize more needle exchanges like the one in Miami. The bill's sponsor, State Senator Oscar Brainin from Miami Gardens.
We have a few things that work against us when we try to do something like a needle exchange. The first thing is it is a outside-of-the-box idea. It just sounds different.
Last year, a similar bill sailed through its committees but never got scheduled for a final vote in the House. In fact, it took four tries just to get permission for the program in Miami, and it's temporary.
We have traditionally attacked drugs, addiction, from a criminal justice standpoint, and attacking it this way, which is very health-centric, is completely new.
New to Florida, anyway. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, needle exchanges do prevent the spread of viruses in injection drug users. Thing is, carrying around loads of needles to hand out without prescriptions can break drug paraphernalia possession laws. Lots of other states figured out how to legalize this decades ago. But it wasn't legal to operate exchanges in Florida until 2016. That's when the legislature gave Miami-Dade County a special dispensation to try it for 5 years. It was a huge win for Dr. Hansel Tooks. He first brought the needle exchange proposal to Tallahassee as a med student 6 years ago. Tooks is now head of the IDEA exchange. At a recent meeting with officials from Miami-Dade County, the city of Miami, police, and public health agencies, Tooks shared a number he was proud of.
I have data here from the CDC's analysis of people who inject drugs in the city of Miami. This is the CDC, this is not me. 38.6% use the needle exchange program.
Doesn't that help encourage it?
No, Ronnie.
Ron Book, chair of the Miami-Dade County Homeless Trust. Tooks has answered this question before.
Nobody who used our program, and we collect a lot of data, was a first-time user of opioids when they came there. Not one person.
The meeting was called following an investigation into new HIV cases found in homeless people using heroin and living under the overpass where the exchange swaps needles. The program discovered 10 new cases during routine testing and reported them to the health department. They worked with the CDC, an epidemiologist, to figure out what was happening. Before the results were in, the city of Miami moved quickly to close the homeless encampment. Miami's director of human services, Milton Vickers, said parents were angry that their kids were seeing homeless people using drugs under the expressway.
The city, the county, and the state have contributed millions of dollars in an attempt to bring that neighborhood back. Our opioid encampment was a block away from a brand new housing project that we're attempting to bring families with children in.
Took said he doesn't want kids to see that stuff either, and that's why the exchange is there. The program maps out HIV and Hep C data with drug arrest information to figure out where to go.
It's not that we go to this place and then all of a sudden everything occurs there. It's the opposite.
After the encampment was cleared, results from the CDC study suggested the virus was introduced by people from outside the encampment, possibly through sex work, possibly through shared needles. By then, Tooks and health officials had scrambled to find shelters and hospital beds for the exchange patients, like Arrow, so they wouldn't lose track of the people who needed treatment. The crisis ultimately led to more treatment options for homeless people. These are the sorts of conflicts that other counties may have to deal with if the expansion bill passes. Counties would have to opt in. It's up to them to sign off on any needle exchange. And the proposal bans the use of any state funds for needles. In Miami, the exchange gets support from private donors, the University of Miami, the drug maker Gilead, and some other grants.
Yeah, I'm here to see Dr. Tooks.
It's almost a year before I see Arrow again. If it weren't for the tattoos running down his arms, I don't think I would have recognized him at first. Clear skin, a little paunch around his midsection. He looked healthier.
How have you been?
Wonderful.
Yeah?
Yeah.
He had an appointment with Dr. Tooks.
Still taking Biktarvy?
He looks better, but it's been a rough year for Arrow.
Daily basis, regimental.
Last May, his girlfriend died from a heart infection.
Deep breath.
That can happen to people who inject drugs.
Exhale.
And after that, Arrow says he overdosed.
Deep breath.
On purpose.
Exhale.
Narcan Deep from the breath. Needle exchange brought him back.
Exhale.
He kept using. $400 worth of heroin and fentanyl a day. He says he paid for it by dealing.
Deep breath.
Arrow says he doesn't remember a lot from this period, but he does remember using so much he ran out of fresh needles between visits to the exchange, so he grabbed other people's used needles.
How much are you smoking now?
And then he tested positive for HIV and Hep C. Tooks and his colleagues threw Arrow one more life raft. They got him an inpatient drug treatment bed.
I've slowed down some.
At the appointment, a string of keychains from Narcotics Anonymous clicked away at his waist.
My chain of sobriety. I got 30 days, 60 days, and 90-day chips.
Arrow's HIV is under control, and medication cured his hep C. Even if the needle exchange bill passes and Florida counties get to decide whether to create more of these programs, not every person who uses needle exchanges will necessarily get this far. Arrow, he's focused on staying sober one day at a time, and he's starting to want new things, like a job. For Health News Florida, I'm Sammy Mack in Miami.
That was a report from WLRN in Miami, as Sammy just said. And if you're just tuning in, I'm Janelle Irwin. This is WMNF in Tampa on 88.5 at the far left of your dial. I wanted to bring this up because I was so impressed with Sammy's report. As a fellow, or I guess I should say former radio reporter, it was well produced. The sound was mixed well. And you could tell that she really put a lot of work into it. So I just really wanted to share that because I geeked out over it a little bit. But it's also such an important issue because drug addiction is an epidemic. And fentanyl addictions are an epidemic. And we're facing so many questions about not just needle exchanges, but things like, should Narcan be readily available for people in an overdose situation? It's literally a life-saving drug, but yet it's difficult to access. And people worry, as you heard in that report, well, isn't this encouraging use by making these things available? And everybody kind of interrupted and said, no, Ronnie, that's not how it is. We still continue to have these questions. And behind it all is this one looming source, I think, and that is this war on drugs. You know, yes, there are obviously fentanyl is killing people. It's a terrible thing. But you're also seeing a shift in perception on things like cannabis. It's now being used for medicine in more states than it's not. Many states are coming around to legalizing it for recreational use, recognizing that it's, you know, might even be safer than alcohol. Most people would argue it is safer than alcohol. You're really seeing a shifting attitude. Is it enough to catch up with the people who need the help the most to save their lives and not just stigmatize them for having an addiction? So this is what I want to talk about. Please give us a call, 813-239-9663. We already have a couple of folks on hold. Let's go first to Jason in Sarasota. Jason, what's on your mind?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Better than poor Arrow. It made me so sad.
Hopefully it all worked out for him.
I hope his life raft worked.
Definitely. I agree. I absolutely agree. But I wanted to ask just kind of maybe two, if I could, really simple questions.
Sure.
One, in regards specifically to the needle exchange program, I guess. What would be, in your opinion, one pro and one con?
Well, I mean, I can think of a bunch of pros, and I mean, the biggest of them is that you're going to stop the spread of infectious diseases. That's definitely the biggest one. It's harder to find a con because, I mean, the only thing that immediately comes to mind, and I just said this, was that these sorts of things encourage people and make it easier for them to use drugs by saying, okay, well, we'll make it safe for you. They have no incentive to stop or something like that. And there has been research to show that that's just simply not the case. There's people who are coming into these sorts of programs are not first-time users. This is not making people go, oh, well, screw it. I'm going to go ahead and get hooked on some junk.
Right.
So I just have a really hard time thinking of cons. At this point in time, without there being legal methods in place to allow for these types of programs, there's certainly a con for those people who wish to help and provide clean needles to users, because if you carry too many of them, you're facing paraphernalia charges. So,
sure.
But that's probably not what you meant by a con.
No. That's it. I just wanted to ask. I didn't want to input. And I guess this is, I have kind of one question and then maybe a follow-up. It's really simple. I guess my second question would be, is there an age limit? So, like if I am a minor and I want to you know, get safe needles, you know, could I go there? Like, as a minor, I mean, specifically. Like, I'm an adult, you know?
I don't have a specific, like, 100% certain answer, but I will tell you that it's kind of like a, you know, no questions asked sort of scenario. Okay. Like, people don't have to provide personal information. So if, like, a 7-year-old comes up and is like, yo, give me some needles, you might have an issue. But if a 16-year-old comes up, they're not going to say, are you 18? So,
Kind of like the STD testing kind of thing. You know, like,
yeah.
We'll give you your results and call it a day.
Exactly. And did you have anything else?
Awesome. No, that's it. Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem, Jason. Thank you for the call. Have a great weekend.
Likewise.
All right. You're listening to WMNF. I'm Janelle Irwin on Midpoint Friday. We are talking about needle exchange programs and their effect on people's health, infectious diseases, and overall just, you know, drug issues. If you'd like to get in on the queue, we've got about 9 minutes left. The number is 813-239-9663. Let's go now to John in Sarasota. John, what's on your mind, my friend?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, great. I'm sorry I'm driving, and I've got you on the... I want to make this...
You actually have a really good connection, so good Bluetooth.
I just wanted to make a couple of points, and before we switch to drugs, about, you know, racism. I mean, I am an old, big white dude, but I'm also married to a Latina. And the point about, in other countries, I will tell you right off the bat that if I go to her country, everybody's very respectful to me because of the color of my skin or the lack of amount of melanin in my skin. But if here, there's times where we've been, like, driving around and had to stop and get gas, and sometimes I'm like, baby, let's just get in the car. Don't speak Spanish, just get in the car, because I was afraid. So there is, I think, yes, there's white privilege, and I have been granted it, and I have never signed up and given it away. I try my best to not be a racist and accept, you know, try to be as inclusive, especially in my classroom, as possible. You know, I like to say something like, for example, are you a cook?
Yeah, I love to cook. I'm a cook and fool.
So if I came over, what do you think about the word tolerance?
What do I think about the word tolerance?
Yeah.
Well, if we're using it in terms of cooking, I would think of it as, you know, how many peppers can you tolerate in your whatever I'm cooking.
If you invited me over for dinner, I know, but if you invited me over for dinner and I said, and you asked, how was your dinner? And I said, it was tolerable. I could tolerate it. Would you kind of think that I didn't like it?
I would, definitely, yes. I see where you're going.
My students, I don't like the word tolerate.
Uh-huh.
I like the word celebrate differences.
No, I think that's wonderful.
And celebrate it. Tolerance is the baseline, I guess.
Sure.
For me, it should all be celebrated.
And John...
Moving on, I'm going to give you more time. And with the drug thing, I think Mitch Hedberg put it really funny, and I don't mean sometimes you either have to laugh or cry.
Well, if you listen to my show ever, you know that I often use humor to make a point. So
I think he overdosed and died because of a heroin addiction, but he did say something like, one of his jokes was, nobody gets mad at somebody for having a disease. Like, nobody says, F him, he has lupus.
Exactly.
F him, he has diabetes.
What a loser. He got cancer.
Exactly. And it's a disease. People have to accept it. There's different tolerances, and however it got introduced into their system, it's not something you can just put down and walk away. It's an actual physical dependency disease.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really a real choice, is my point.
You know, John, while I have you, and real quick, because I'm running out of time, but I think that the concept, the conversation surrounding race and the conversation about drugs, I think that there's a lot of correlations between the two conversations, because you tend to have, in terms of criminalizing drug use, that tends to disproportionately affect people of color and various minorities more so than it does white people. Do you have any thoughts? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Absolutely, I agree with that.
Well, John,
go ahead. I know you have other callers.
Thank you so much. And John, just let me tell you, it's so nice to hear somebody admit that there's still work to be done, like personally, because I think that our country would come so much farther. And I say this as a white person who knows that she has a lot to learn about, you know, being woke, I guess. But I think if we all recognize that we have more to learn and that we can do more and we can do better, I think we will.
Well, for example, as a teacher with most of my students are children of color,
mm-hmm.
I make assumptions that they know things. And the assumptions I make are based on my upbringing and my privilege.
It's hard. My husband's a teacher, so I feel you.
So as I just think that nobody's perfect, but once you accept it and try to take control of the problem, racism or whatever, and then you say, you know what, I didn't mean to be racist, I want to better myself.
Exactly.
And that's how you do it. You learn from the other people, you know?
Yep. Hey, what a great call, John. Thank you so much. You have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you for your time.
Okay, bye-bye. Boy, John was a delight. I'm going to read a couple of emails and text messages. This one coming in from Robert. The phobia against needle exchanges is based on antiquated opinions and policies of the 1940s. The next time you get sick and go to the doctor, would you ask them to treat you with treatment protocols from the 1940s? Of course not. I might also add, you probably wouldn't ask them to take one of the dirty needles out of the biohazard box and use those. It's time for this irrational and emotionally based policy to treat this as a public health issue rather than and enter the 21st century. Thank you so much for that email. And then we've got a text message. our poor last caller. Cool dude, but he has melanin, hopefully not melanoma. Yes, I do not wish melanoma on anyone. It is a deadly, deadly skin cancer disease that no one should have to. If you see something weird on your skin, you should see a doctor and have it checked out, because melanoma is very, very aggressive. That is your public service announcement from Chanel Irwin. Boy, I tell you what, guys, this has been a great conversation. If you're just tuning in, we spent the first half of the show talking about the Tampa mayoral election between Jane Castor and David Stras. There's been a lot of negative campaigning, particularly on the side of the David Stras campaign. The most recent issue has been he's accusing her of double dipping. She is collecting about $113,000 a year in pension payments annually. And then she'll also, if elected, receive about $160,000 salary as mayor. So the argument there is that she'll be receiving two government paychecks. Of course, people who reject that say that, you know, she earned that pension and it's not a second salary. It's a pension that was already earned. Lots of things that he's levied against her that I'm sure plenty of Stras supporters or even people who don't support either candidate can find some weight within, arguments about the controversial biking wall black policy that was under Castor's tenure as police chief that disproportionately affected African-American bike riders who were given tickets for minor infractions. That was a huge issue back in 2014 that's been following her around in her mayor's race. So there's just a lot of stuff going on. Castor, of course, is just has a landslide lead over him, though. So we'll see what happens in that race April 23rd. If you didn't know there was a race, there is. And read up on it. And vote. It's very important. And then, of course, the second half of the show, we've been discussing needle exchanges. We listened to a wonderful, wonderful report from WLRN's Sammy Mack. She has been following the issue for a year, and she chronicles a man whose first name, or who she calls Arrow in the report. Very harrowing story. If you missed it on my show, I believe you can find it on the WLRN website. Just Google WLRN. It'll pop up and listen to it. It's it's just a really powerful piece. She did a great job, and I hope you all enjoyed it. We've got Joellen coming up in about a minute with Art in Your Ear. Not sure what she's got in store for you today, but I'm sure it's something fabulous. We're going to go ahead and call it quits here. Thank you so much to everyone who called today. I want to say a huge thank you to my engineer, Frank Knox, for, as always, expertly manning our controls. Also, thank you to Patty Perky for answering the phones and making sure I don't have drunk people on the air. And again, stay tuned for Joellen Schilke with Art in Your Ear. From all of us here at WMNF Tampa, happy Friday.
Is there and Johnny wants being cars. Johnny's in America.